Hi, I'm Sam Fesich from the EduMagic Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
I hope that in this past year, if one of the lessons could have been or should have been, you know, what can we provide for our teachers or offer our teachers that gives them the chance to explore and choose something that they need now or that they think that they will need in the future?
Welcome to Devil's Advocate, a Leader of Learning podcast series. Join co-hosts Rochelle Denae Poth and me, Dan Krynas, as we tackle trending topics in education from all angles backed by sound research, where no topic is too big or too small and where you can be part of the action. Let's dive right in. Welcome, listeners, to this episode of Devil's Advocate. Man, we've come so far this year, I feel like, not just on this series, but really in our schools and in our profession. And, you know, we want to kind of wrap up here with this episode on professional learning, maybe talking about how teachers can continue to learn over the summer, but also with the idea, the notion that we need to take some time to unwind and relax as well. But sometimes for educators, there's no better time to continue to develop yourself and maybe others around you as well than the summertime when you don't have the same responsibilities as you do during the school year. So we'd love to talk about that. Before we do, let me welcome on my partner in crime, Rochelle Denae Poth. How are you? I know there's always a lot going on with you, but are you making it through everything okay? Yeah. That's really what I want to know.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's good to see you and talk. And making it through. And, you know, the one thing that I think has really helped all of us to make it through, and when I say all of us, I mean educators, people, I mean just anybody in the world, is having, you know, support system connections and just checking in with people regularly. And so I'm thankful to have technology that enables us to do that, to have conversations, so it doesn't feel like it's really been like a year and a half since you've seen family or friends. So yeah, I'm doing well and I'm excited for our conversation today.
Excellent. And you said something that I feel like is a great starting point, jumping off point, which is essentially that support system, and I'm going to maybe stretch it into like a professional learning network. When we talk about professional development, I know I can safely speak for you too when I say that such a big part of my own growth and development over the past 5, 6, 7 years is getting connected, building a really awesome network of people outside of my school and district to grow with and to learn from. I mean, heck, it's really why I started this podcast. I've told people before, it sounds kind of selfish, like I'm my number one fan. And the reason I say that and the reason I keep that in the back of my head all the time is because first and foremost, I really want this show, including this series, to be just a really great learning opportunity for me, but also, of course, for the listeners as well. So let's start there. You know, when it comes to professional development, you know, what would you say about creating that network of people, whether it's using technology or not, but having that like professional learning network around you to help you grow and develop?
It's something that I wish I knew about many years ago because, and I've spoken about this so many times over the years too, because when I first started teaching a while ago, you know, we didn't have all the social media, we didn't have the technology that we have now. So connecting really did take an intentional effort to set aside the time to meet with colleagues, whether in your school or out of your school. And so it didn't happen that often for me. And, only probably since, I guess, 2014. So it's been a while now that I started to really figure out social media and to get out there more at conferences and to build a network. And it has taken time over those years. But I think now, back to when I started, what changes I could have made in my classroom or how much more support I could have had, or I could have even given to people had I been part of a network. But my network was limited to the teachers in my school, or if there were like language educator conferences that I might have gone to once a year, that was kind of it. But now being able to reach out, I mean, the list is almost endless anymore of all of the different ways we can connect. And I think it's so critical, especially at a time where, the past year, you know, we haven't been able to go out as we had been in the past. And so how do you find answers? How do you ask questions? How do you get resources? How do you feel like you're not just sitting at home by yourself talking to a screen all the time? And it's really important to have that space where you can reach out and ask questions or express frustration, whatever it is that you need, just knowing that you can do it at any time and that there's going to be somebody there to kind of respond to you and give you support you need.
Now, I want to back up for a sec because, again, you mentioned technology and, you know, I think we tend to have similar opinions about things, which kind of makes being a devil's advocate a little bit tough sometimes. But I said before we hit record here, I'm going to try and actually push back and play devil's advocate. And so when you mention technology, to be honest, when I think about professional learning networks, I think my mind and a lot of people's minds go to social media. And I think that playing devil's advocate here, a lot of people who do push back on professional learning networks, and you know, they're obviously really important, but I think one of the biggest pushbacks I hear is like, I'm not into Twitter, or I just don't really use social media like that, or I want to keep my social media for personal rather than professional. So I think a lot of that is the pushback that I would probably hear the most when it comes to building a professional learning network. And it's not so much about, I don't want to do it, or I don't think it's valuable. It's more like, I'm not into the social media. Like, what would you say then if we have, you know, listeners who feel that way, or friends of the listeners who they can help kind of inspire to reach out more and use PLNs as professional development? What would you say to that?
Yeah, great. There's always that pushback on the technology piece, right? Doesn't matter really what it is, but it can feel, I totally get it, because it can feel like, okay, I have to build this network, but that's just another thing that I have to do. And I don't have the time to do that. And maybe I don't want to use, like I was like that for years, where I didn't want to have a Facebook or Twitter because I didn't understand the ways that you could use it beyond what I had seen, like people posting food or celebrities or anything like that. And I think that it's important to realize, like, you don't have to do all the things. I mean, having, you know, we use Voxer to have conversations. It might even be a text message. It's just having somebody somewhere that you can reach out to faster when you need them, as opposed to just staying isolated in your classroom or if you're teaching from home and having that opportunity. Now, like, you know, whenever we can go to in-person conferences, those are my favorite. When you have that time where you're sitting there and you're not even in a session, you just have those side conversations, you pass by somebody and you make these new connections. And that has been amazing for me, but it's kind of two-sided because one, you get to meet new people when you go there. But the other part of it, as we know, is the people that you've made connections with through social media, whether it's a Twitter chat or on Facebook or whatever one you're using at this point. And then you get to meet them in person and you see like, oh yeah, like you feel like you already know them. And for anybody who's thinking, yeah, you know, I'm really not into Twitter, that's okay, because there are a lot of other spaces out there. And if it's not social media, then it's a community. Maybe you get involved in, like, you know, I'm in Microsoft Educator community, or you join ISTE, for example. And it's those networks where you're just part of a group of educators from around the world, and you can participate when you want, when you need to, whenever is most convenient to you. So I think there's tons of options out there. It's about finding what meets your specific interests and needs. But with that being said, also not being afraid to give something a try too, just to see, like, because I was wrong about so many of those things. So I don't know.
No, that's great. And I do love that you mentioned that alternative of, like, if social media is not your thing, there might be these other communities of educators out there, you know, beyond your school, beyond your district. I guess what I wanted to then kind of push back at you with is, like, does a professional learning network have to be something that is out of your school and out of your district? Do I have to connect, even if it's not through social media, with other people around the country, around the world? Or can I find that kind of network, that kind of professional development closer by, in my school, in my community, in, you know, somewhere closer to home?
Yeah, because it's however you form it, right? So the idea is that you are just connecting with your colleagues anywhere, anytime. So social media, of course, if you're looking to connect globally, definitely technology helps to facilitate that, or Twitter chats or whatever, but it can be just even within your school. It could be even in like your neighborhood, because I know just even from my experience, like where I live, two people that I work with actually live in my neighborhood. And there are, I think, at least five other teachers in my neighborhood as well. And so you go outside, you go for a walk, you get to know your neighbors, and you become a PLN, and maybe you meet in somebody's backyard, like patio PD, which is something that Jason Bretzman had done a couple of years ago at his home, and just invited educators to come on over and just sit outside and you talk. So yeah, it doesn't have, I mean, in my opinion, it doesn't have a specific to like, they cannot be in your own school district system, county or anything. It's whatever support system you need that's going to work for you.
That's awesome advice. I want to just mention too that, you know, on this series and on this podcast, we've talked a lot of times about like professional learning communities and really utilizing opportunities within schools to collaborate with grade team members, content area, you know, same content area, and really making like teams of teachers, or in one of my schools, we kind of call them pods, and really learning from each other. One of my favorite ways to grow professionally and utilize that professional learning network that is still a part of your one school. It's not about social media or getting connected with other people. It's just within your school is learning walks and walking around and learning from each other. You know, we talk about professional development. In my opinion, my humble own opinion, I don't know about anybody else, like I feel that that's one of the most powerful ways to learn about teaching. Watching other people, you know, taking mental notes or literal, you know, jotting some things down about what you notice, what you wonder, what you can maybe kind of steal. I mean, let's face it, you know, sometimes professional development is like, oh man, I really love that idea. Now, how can I take that and run with it in my own classroom and with my own students? I mean, so much of education is like that. So I think those are great ideas, whether it's wanting to connect with a more global community, like you said, or even if it's not. Another topic I was thinking about, starting to think about as you mentioned this, was opportunities that schools and districts give for teachers and how to develop themselves professionally. I think one of the biggest pushbacks that I've heard and sensed over the years of my experience is like, we're just told, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a classroom teacher now at this point, like we're just told when we need to meet and where and what we need to talk about. And that's it. Like there's not a ton of autonomy, I guess. Do you have experience with that too? I'm guessing you do. And what would you say about that?
Yeah, it's definitely something that comes up in conversations a lot of the time, because when we look at PD, professional development versus, say, personalized professional development. And when we think about what we do in our classrooms as teachers, I mean, we want to provide personalized learning experiences for our students and to meet, you know, their interests and their needs. And so as teachers, like we should have the opportunity to have that same experience because I mean, we learn from that experience. So then I think we then would apply that into our classrooms. And so often from what I've heard, and I've had a lot of PD sessions that I've been involved in all of the years I've been teaching at my school, and they have definitely changed over the last couple of years, specifically having more, you know, teacher-led presentations rather than somebody coming in from outside the district or whoever to present. And what I think has been a deciding factor too is it depends on, you know, what the actual PD is, because in a lot of schools and a lot of states, there are required trainings that have to happen every single year. So at the start of the school year, you might have like a 3-hour mandatory training, standardized testings in the spring, teachers have to proctor those exams. And so there is PD that you have to go through for that, or new teachers or new technology or whatever it is. And I understand that there are required components to that. But then the other piece of it is, you know, I've been really trying to advocate for like sharing teacher talent. And we all have something that we're doing in our classrooms or in our roles that we have to offer. And I see that, you know, just like our students, when students do presentations in our classroom, or my classroom, I should say, they are a little bit more engaged. I think sometimes the one's just me presenting on a topic, especially if we do like review. So I think the same thing kind of applies. Like whenever you have that connection where somebody in your school is presenting on, you know, Microsoft tools that you can use in your classroom, and it's somebody that you know that you can connect with, that you can follow up with, and that's your network that you're building, it makes a bigger difference rather than having somebody come in from the outside. And that is, I mean, my own experience with that, but also just what I've heard from all the different spaces where we hear conversations happening about PD and people saying like, it's what's done to teachers. Like there isn't choice in it a lot of the time. And I think, I hope that in this past year, if one of the lessons could have been or should have been, you know, what can we provide for our teachers or offer our teachers that gives them the chance to explore and choose something that they need now or that they think that they will need in the future? Because we were all at different places when schools closed. And if you had PD lined up and you're like, all right, today we're going to learn whatever this topic is, might be nobody's thinking about that because they're trying to think about how are we going to do this remote or whatever, you know, our experience was. So there's good and bad with the, I don't want to say canned PD curriculum that comes in because we obviously need some of that. But I think every part or as much as possible, you should involve some teachers in the school district sharing what they're doing in their classrooms because that's how we learn.
You know, it's funny when before we started recording, I said something like I was going to try and push back on you a little bit and play devil's advocate when it comes to PD and sort of put myself in the shoes of like a school or district administrator. And I was getting ready to hit you with, but we have these PDs that we need teachers to go through. And you already addressed it and you countered it. So that was great. And what I heard, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I gathered out of what you said just there was like, yeah, you have to do certain PDs, but when you don't, or even when you do, let's try and get, you know, let's try and take advantage of the expertise among the teachers that we already have. And I think that's super powerful when you can have colleagues learning from and with each other. We actually tried that in one of my schools earlier this school year, and it worked great. It was one of those situations where it could have easily turned into, this is what the school or the district needs us to do, because it was one of those like conference days. I think it was election day, if I recall. And those tend, in my experience, they tend to turn into like just at the very least, the agenda is established by the administrators and they say, here are the things we're learning about. And for whatever reason, you know, maybe the district has paid for a consultant or an outside agency to come in and deliver PD, or there's a program or platform that the district has paid for that they need everybody to learn. But my school was like, listen, the principal, he reached out to a dozen or so teachers who, in his opinion, had been sort of on the, I don't know what you want to call it, like early adopters, if you will, or people who had gotten good quicker. When it came to like blended learning and really doing well in the situation that we had, which was like you got kids in front of you in person and then you have kids at home. And those teachers were the ones who then said, here's what I think I would like to show other teachers. Mm-hmm. And then the other teachers attended their sessions and learned from them with something that they're good. They were getting good at and was really working for them and their students when it came to that hybrid style of instruction. Right. And it was great. It was powerful. And we got a lot of really good feedback from it. So, again, I think we would both agree that, you know, especially if you're an administrator listening, or if you have a role in your school or your district where you can kind of affect that sort of change when it comes to PD sessions in your schools, tap into those teachers who you know are doing great things and you know are could be comfortable enough showing other teachers what they know and learning from each other. I think it's such a great way to go and it makes so much difference.
Yeah, I really do believe that teachers want to learn from like their colleagues, especially whenever they have, you know, it's that approachability too, because you form those connections and then you relate, and you might not realize that somebody else in your school is having the same kind of problem, challenge, whatever it is that you are. And then you have that time to work together and you feel more comfortable too, because knowing that you can approach that person who might be presenting a session, that's one of your teachers, also helping teachers to develop kind of their leadership skills and speaking and sharing what it is that they're doing in their classroom. I think it makes a big difference. And, I know it's not easy because, like we were saying, you know, schools have certain things that are required PD training, but it all comes back to, you know, not every teacher in some areas, like if we're looking at like, say it's technology they're bringing in, you know, not every teacher is at the same level as every other teacher. They don't all need the same PD. And so when you give teachers that chance where they can kind of pick a course. So maybe it's all about Google tools, but you have two different sessions, one for, okay, nobody, I've never used these before. And then another one that's like, this is what else you can do with Google, just to throw some random examples out there. Then it's, you have more buy-in from teachers because they have that choice. I think it also shows that, you know, you value teachers to be like self-directed and that they know what their areas that they need to grow in or what their strengths are, and kind of fill in, you know, by having them create their own sessions or even like you mentioned, like learning walks. Those, that was something that was kind of new to me as well. But I think just having a mix of not just like 8 hours straight up, okay, we're all doing the same thing. Okay. And the other piece, and now that we've learned in this last year, it's the last thing I'll say about this is, with us, with many schools, most schools being remote, PD took on a new space, right? We weren't together. We didn't have all that collaborative space. And so a lot of it ended up being self-directed, finding something and then kind of, you know, reporting out on what you did. Did you take in a webinar? Did you do a conference? Were you part of a book study, for example, and sharing that and valuing that teachers make their own choice, but also that flexibility in it. And so maybe on that day, I didn't sit down for that 8 hours of PD on the computer, but I did these other things, and this is how it impacted my students and myself in my classroom. But then for those required trainings, are there options of how to do that? Or, you know, is it something that's offered online that's not necessarily tied in with the district, that a teacher who's balancing all the things as we have been in this past year could do that at their own time and at their own pace instead of like all at the same time? So just some random ideas to throw out there.
Those are great ideas. And one of the things that I got out of what you just said too is that you need some differentiation and personalization when it comes to professional development. And I think as a school or district administrator, the pushback on that might be like, how do I know where everyone's skills are? Or how do I even have the time to go about trying to plan for all these different levels of abilities and skills when it comes to, especially with technology? And I think my answer, so I'm going to, I guess, like push back and also answer that at the same time. Selfishly, as an instructional coach, and I know that not every school is fortunate enough to have full-time coaches, but I think a lot of schools are trying their best to do something like this. But I think, to be honest, maybe a little biased here, but when it comes to really understanding where teachers' ability levels are at in terms of instruction and in terms of instructional technology, that may be more so left up to instructional coaches, because they're the ones who are getting into classrooms really more so than administrators. I'm generalizing. I think there are some administrators out there who do a really great job of getting into classrooms. I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but I think for the most part, and especially this year with contact tracing and lots of other things that COVID required administrators to do that was sort of outside of the norm, it's been hard. I had administrators at one of my schools recently literally tell me, we've had trouble getting into classrooms for the last 5, 6, 7 weeks of the school year. That's our hope for you as the coach, is to just really make sure you're getting into classrooms, connecting with teachers, helping them where necessary, asking them what they need help with. And you know, I'm happy to take that off of the shoulders of the administrators. But again, I think that if that can't happen as much, where administrators are getting into classrooms, or whether they're maybe not really aware as much about the variety of comfort levels of teachers, whether it's with technology or with instruction, lean on instructional coaches or place more value in instructional coaching as a practice, because I think that outside of teachers really looking for their own opportunities to develop themselves, that's a big way that we can inspire that kind of personalization in professional development.
I agree. And I laugh when you give the pushback and then you have the answer for it too. Yeah,
I kind of hit it from both sides there, I guess.
Yeah, no, but that's good. But like the other thing too, is you, when you started, you were talking about, you know, how do you plan and for this? And I don't know how many, I'm sure everybody out there is like, yeah, we did so many Microsoft forms or Google surveys or whatever to, and you have to trust teachers to respond or to answer honestly when it comes to some things, because at the end of the day, like, we are accountable. So if we say, oh yeah, I know everything about Microsoft, or I know everything about this or whatever the topic is, we're still accountable. And so even if an administrator, tech coach, somebody doesn't come into our classroom every single day, at some point they might. And we still need to show that we have that knowledge. And besides that, like, what model does that set for students if we're like, oh yeah, I know that, and just kind of glaze by? So using surveys and really figuring out what are the questions to ask, having some that are open-ended and asking teachers, like, what do you need? And also maybe even anonymous surveys, even though I know sometimes teachers are like, are we really sure this is anonymous? But just like our students, if you're a classroom teacher, need the feedback, administrators, coaches, everybody needs feedback from one another. So asking questions like, what type of PD works for you, or listing some of the prior PD sessions that was offered or that were offered in your school, and asking for feedback from teachers. So you know, okay, yeah, nobody wants to sit for 3 hours without a break and just listen. Okay, we need more active learning. Or how about this? Or presenting ideas and just valuing those different voices. But I guess the easiest is probably surveys and having a team. Like in my school, we have a PD committee, and it has, you know, elementary teachers, high school teachers, administrators, everybody is kind of on, and we have open conversations. We send out surveys, look at what the teachers are saying, and they really do try to provide something for everybody while still making sure to include all of those required things, but trying to offer an extra choice. And this year, just as an example, we have PLCs, and the time that we put into that normally would be like every other Wednesday after school. Well, we weren't together in person, so there was more flexibility in that. And you could choose to do hours if you did a conference online, if you did a webinar. Some teachers formed like a book study, and just, you know, knowing that teachers are hopefully doing what's best for their own professional growth. And
let me actually interject right there.
Okay.
So you said, hopefully teachers are doing what they're expected. A few minutes ago, you mentioned the word trust. And so yeah. I kind of want to push back as sort of an administrator, but also push back on administrators too, because whether they say it or not, I think a lot of times there is not as much trust as there needs to be. For example, this school year in my district, they did something kind of unique where they shaved 15 minutes off of the dismissal time at every school, and they added for teachers either 60-minute or 75-minute, depending on how many school days we have in that week, PD hours or PD time on Mondays. So essentially, every school day was shorter, but we took that time, lumped it together on a Monday, every single Monday, and said, that's the time that our teachers are staying after school and collaborating and working and PDing and all that stuff. However, I think it's safe to say that depending on what school you're at and depending on how things were handled, sometimes it's still very much driven by the administration. And I'm pushing back here to say, what if we have those administrators who either say it or don't say it, but they just can't trust their teachers mm-hmm. to come up with their own PD topics? Or best, I think the best example is, what if administrators can't just turn over time to their teachers to work on what they need to work on? Like, then what? Because I know that's happened. It's definitely happened in my experience where, again, sometimes they say it and sometimes you just sense that, like, that principal or that assistant principal, they feel like they cannot just say, here you go. Here's 60 minutes. Here's 75 minutes. work with your content area team, work with your grade level team. Now go. Like that, I know that's a hard thing for principals because of that trust factor. They don't know what's happening. You mentioned the word accountability, I think, and I don't know, is that the answer? Like how do we combat that?
Yeah. Wow. You packed a punch on that one.
I'm coming right after you, school administrators.
But you know, like it's with all things. And we know, I mean, I'm a teacher, you teach educators. It doesn't matter what job we have. I mean, I include myself, there are times that we slack or we might take a shortcut or we say we did something we did or we only partially did it or maybe we didn't do it at all. I don't know. But I also think that the flip side of that is we may not have done, like prime example, clerical days in schools. So some teachers, I mean, do you physically need to be in your classroom on a clerical day if you're like grading and all of that thing? Like in this past year, clearly you don't have to be because we've been at home. And so I think that sometimes teachers will maybe not necessarily use that time in schools to do whatever that task is, but they do it at a different time when it's convenient. Or maybe they're just not focused and not making excuses. Cause I mean, I've done that before where it's like, or the flip side of that too is sometimes I can do things depending on what the topic is that we're working on. I could do it a lot faster than maybe some others can. And then sometimes it takes me three times as long as other people. So how do you balance that whenever you have these different time factors? And, you know, if you could take a shortcut, sometimes I think people take shortcuts, but it does come down to trust and accountability for administrators. Yeah, you have to trust your teachers, but the same thing with teachers, you have to trust your administrators and we have to trust our students. So in schools, regardless of your role, there has to be trust. And you might find that, you know, that trust is broken. And so that's when you have to rethink and reflect on, okay, what were we doing? What could we have done better? What is working? What is not working, for example? And I think, you know, there's ideas that you can use. Like I mentioned a survey, but having accountability partners. And so involving teachers together, and maybe you're not necessarily working like during the school day, maybe you have other things you want to do on that school day to keep up with your professional duties and preparing for your students. But maybe on the weekend you get together and you have a 1 hour Zoom where you're talking about a book or you're brainstorming or you're co-creating a lesson together or something. And you have people that are accountable with you. But then the other part too is with administrators, we all need to be part of the same conversation and give pushback, of course, and share ideas and value each other's opinions and perspectives. So then having those connections, and I know just in my own experience, you know, in our PLCs, we've had, you know, our administrators get involved as much as they can because there is so much going on right now that they have to be so many places at the same time, but so that they're part of that as well as they should be, because part of the learning, just like we need to be part of the students' learning and we're connecting with their parents. So like it's that whole network, and it's never going to be a perfect system. It's never going to be the best perfect choice for everybody. But I think the key is in providing the opportunities. And then if it doesn't work, then you go, okay, well, that didn't work. Here's why. All right, now let's try this. And you just, that's what professional learning is. It's continued growth, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. And one of the things I heard you say, and now you're kind of going right after administrators, I think a little bit too, you kind of said like, we need to all be part of that conversation about how we're going to improve the instruction at our school and how we're going to continue to provide that professional development. And I think that challenges school and district administrators by saying, like, we're all part of the team here, and no one, we can't be putting people on pedestals when it comes to the success of our school. We need to all be part of the planning and the preparation and the professional learning. I love that. Now we're going to have to wrap up here, not because this isn't a great conversation and I'm timing it, but because I'm noticing here that my MacBook is about to die. So before we do wrap up, I thought maybe we could just offer up some advice, I guess, on teacher professional development, especially heading into the end of the school year and into the summer. And one of the things that we didn't talk a ton about was like podcasts, which obviously, you know, those of you listening right now, you like listening to podcasts, but maybe some other ways to continue to develop yourself. I know we mentioned a lot of them, but for me, listening to podcasts, finding a great book or audio book, it's a little shameless plug here. I just had a chapter out in a book called 100 Things That Teachers Need to Stop Doing. I think that could be a great read for teachers, especially classroom teachers, but all educators at the end of the year and into the summertime. But find a great PD book. I'm just thinking off the top of my head about some of my favorite professional development type books. If you haven't read The Innovator's Mindset yet, I mean, we've had to really innovate in education here over the last year or two. So that would be a great one. There's so many good ones out there. Rochelle, I know, I mean, you've written some of them too. I don't know if you're comfortable sharing your own as ways that people could develop themselves. So I will say that if you're listening, please look up anything that Rochelle has written, because those are awesome PD books as well. But, you know, books and audiobooks are things that, hey, you could be kicking back and relaxing during the summertime and still be consuming, you know, content that'll get you ready for next year and growing and developing. But lastly, having said that, I do want to urge teachers to rest and relax as much as possible this summer, because you've made it through literally the toughest year that we have ever had to face in education. I don't care how long you've been doing it for. We made it. We got through it. Some people are maybe choosing to leave the profession after it. But if you're not, you're going to need that time to like recoup and rejuvenate heading into next school year too. So yes, we talked a lot about professional development, but also find opportunities to, you know, practice some of that self-care that we've talked about before too.
Yeah. And before the MacBook goes, I'll just a couple of things. So you mentioned all the things that I would say. Books. Yeah. I mean, books that I've written, because they have a lot of different stories about challenges and growth and whatever. But I did write a blog about books educators should read. It's on Getting Smart. I think I wrote about a year ago. But then even for districts looking for solutions, like one, there's a platform, it's To Know Me. And it, when we're talking about like accountability and how do you know what teachers need, I checked it out about a year and a half ago, and it is for professional learning for educators, and it's for K-12. It integrates with like the Danielson framework and ISTE standards. And so, you know, there are like independent, like you do your own, but there's also solutions that are out there for schools too. So yeah, lots of choices, but first and foremost, relax first. Wellness is important. Yeah.
I think that's very important. I'm going to try my best to link a lot of the resources that were mentioned throughout the episode, but especially the one Rochelle said about the blog post where there's you know, some of the best education and PD reads. I just saw one the other day. It was like the top 100 education books or something, and I'll try and link that as well. Of course, I'll provide links to the book that I mentioned that I contributed to and Rochelle's. But yeah, I mean, teachers and educators who are listening, continue to grow and continue to develop, but you know, at your own pace and at your own comfort level. And please don't forget to rest and relax. I will give you your final words here, Rochelle. But before I do, I would be remiss if I didn't thank you for making this series a really successful one and joining the journey with me. This will be our final series episode, at least for this school year. And it's been awesome. You know, you and I love chatting, I know, but getting to do it here and in this format has really meant a lot to me. And I know it's gotten a lot of attention and a lot of praise from listeners as well. So I really appreciate you and your time and definitely your thoughts and opinions that you've shared throughout.
Yeah, no, thank you. I love the conversation. I love the pushback. I love sometimes being able to anticipate maybe what the pushback might be and not necessarily realize that I'm answering it before you ask it. So it's great. And I hope that everybody has a good break this summer, but time to kind of explore some new things and rest and come back recharged in the fall.
All right. Well, thanks again, Rochelle. And for all the listeners, please have a great rest of the school year. Definitely enjoy your summer. And if you are looking for opportunities to grow and develop yourself, listen back to this episode, find the resources that we share, and don't hesitate to reach out to either or both of us. You can always find me on leaderoflearning.com or on social media at Dr_Krynes. Rochelle, where can they find you again?
RDENE915, like across everything, very consistent.
Thank you so much for joining us. We encourage you to help contribute to the series. If you want to suggest topic ideas or comment on any of the conversations we have about trending topics in education, please participate on Flipgrid using the topic code Devil's Advocate or visiting flipgrid.com/Devil's Advocate. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to the Leader of Learning podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to others. I would also appreciate it if you'd leave a positive rating and review on iTunes or Podchaser. Links to leave ratings and reviews can be found in the show notes. Thanks, and see you again for another episode of The Devil's Advocate next month.